I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my...
Hey, good morning, Winter Park. Welcome to Punkonomics here on WPRK 91.5. Winter Park, the voice of Rollins College, the best in basement radio. And hosting our show is our resident doctor in economics, Dr. Benjamin Balick.
Good morning.
And our special guest, Corey.
Recurring guest, Corey Carroll. Good to see you guys.
And I am Jesse Velez, and we're going to be toppling... gun control.
Yeah.
Let's almost not get shot on that one, right?
Yeah. I mean, so many, everybody's talking about it. I almost kind of said, well, do we really? Yeah. But I guess, you know, kind of, maybe we should. And we do have, I got to say, you know.
In all fairness, I was thinking about this on the drive up here this morning. I was thinking about, you know, how Obama gets, he gets plastered as this guy that's going to just, you know, he's going to strip away all of our freedoms, right? You know, and he's going to, you know, take all of our guns. We're going to live in concentration camps or, you know, whatever the conspiracy theorists say. I actually feel genuinely bad for this guy because that's the image that's portrayed of him. And then we have, you know, a tragedy.
Right.
And now every, you know, I'm not going to say everybody's crying out. The country's actually pretty well divided on it. But a large part of the country is in favor of firearms control. So it's kind of like this guy's like, well, the conspiracy theorists say that I'm going to do this, but, you know, my constituents actually want me to do it.
Well, you notice part of the big problem here is actually the propaganda that they're using, because if you notice what Obama wants to implement is really nothing. I mean, come on, assault weapons and extended magazines. That's not, and they're still going to have their guns. So the way they come across and say, well, he's going to come and take your guns
already,
and all that.
I just seeing like flashing strobe lights. All of a sudden.
WPRK?
I guess we just got a random call, so Ben and I are going to
go. Yeah, it's probably random. Yes, I don't think yet. But I mean, it should be said, okay. I mean, just for honesty, even. You know, Corey is here also, not just because it's always nice to see him, but also because he's a certifiable gun geek. I mean, really, yeah, I mean, I know. You know, he's the guy who makes his own bullets and stuff.
Oh,
you
know? No.
I have this image of you. I was just thinking about it this morning when I woke up, of you sitting in your lab, some combination of rolling bullets and 3D printing them or something. I don't know. I was somewhere between Batman and Dr. Horrible, you know?
You know, to give you an idea as to why I know so much about firearms, a couple of years ago I set out to start work on a solar company, right? And long story short, I was looking for an industry to learn from, and I needed something that was an industry that needed high precision, reliability, and low manufacturing costs, and I really couldn't find a better example than the firearms industry. So I was able, I studied that industry very extensively, you know, from the design principles of firearms, surface treatment, stuff like that, to try to learn what they do and apply that to the solar industry. And you can learn actually a lot. The firearms industry is one of the oldest industries. It's a very mature industry. A lot of lessons learned there. I mean, a lot of the machining processes that we use to, like, you know, make car parts, they got their starts making, you know, musket rifles for frontiersmen.
Sure.
So, But
it's not a long time ago. There were very few machined things about it.
I mean, and again, I mean, that's really where machining kind of, you know, when we started working with metal, we didn't really need to work with metal until we started working with firearms extensively. There wasn't, you know, you had blacksmiths pounding, you know, metal into the shape of a sword or a horseshoe or something.
There's incidentally a why. I mean, and I want to say also any, if I kind of mention something in passing and a listener finds it interesting, and could I have a reference, a link for that? Please contact me, us, you know, on the Facebook page, anywhere you want. I'll be more than happy to provide, because otherwise I'll forget. So, having said that, there's a wonderful series on YouTube, I guess that would be bootlegged from the BBC, but we can talk about piracy another time. Shout out to all the pirates out there. With Mike Lodes, who is the world specialist on weapons. You see him in many documentaries. He's the guy explaining the swords, and with such enthusiasm. It's wonderful. It's really good. And he has a whole series from the BBC on the history of weapons. Yeah. It's really cool. I watch most of it.
So get into the proposed assault weapons ban. Dianne Feinstein, I believe, she supposedly authored it, meaning that her people wrote it for her, and she just has her name on it.
The puppet masters.
Yeah, exactly, the puppet master.
Well, there's no recognizable economic lobby that is lobbying for gun control, right? That's interesting, because as I was actually doing a little bit of homework to just look at the NRA a little bit and realize that, of course, as suspected, they represent the $12 billion industry.
Yeah, no, they're trying to,
a business industry lobbying operation.
That's right. There's a lot of money behind it.
But, there's no...
No, there's no one
on the
group.
Side, really. No. I mean, who stands to benefit from it economically, really, other than... If you are for gun control, the whole of the country.
There's basically, you know, there's three ways to look at it. One is what you just said is, okay, you know, maybe the country is for it. Two is that, you know, this is just a reaction to an adverse event. You know, humans were very reactionary creatures. So, and things like guns scare us. You know, I mean, for people that don't understand them, or, you know, they've never handled one. Or maybe people that are just naive and think that we live in, you know, a peaceful world with unicorns. You know, guns scare.
No, it's some of the attraction. Let's be honest. When you hold that handgun in your hand, why is it so? Why? What's the buzz you're getting? It's the power. I mean, you know.
Well, and the third option, of course, is that, you know, it's some sort of dystopian future we're facing, and this is the first step on a road to confiscation. And, you know, next thing you know, it's going to look like something out of Minority Report.
Though that maybe we can, in all honesty, I'm torn on this topic. I'll admit personally too. You know, I am a gun owner, and I am. I'm not
torn on it, because what's being asked. Okay, sure, it might be the slippery slope of eliminating everything. You know, in somebody's mind, but they're not really asking for much. I mean, come on. I used to hunt with my dad, and we never needed an. You know, RA's 15 or
absolutely true that. I'm not mean, that's ridiculous. That.
They're actually, you'd be surprised how many practical uses there are in the Midwestern United States for semi-automatic rifles with high-capacity magazines, because of
Chopping trees, maybe?
I mean, No. Believe it or not, it's for controlling varmints like groundhogs, something where you need a rapid follow-up shot. You need bullets that travel at high velocities, right, but not necessarily with high kinetic energy. They need to, you know, fly flat. They don't need to drop. You know, most hunting rifles are chambered in something larger, like .308. It's kind of heavy. It's got some bullet drop. It's meant to take down a larger target. But if you go into the Midwestern U.S., where, you know, I'm not saying that there are millions of people that do this, but, you know, probably thousands.
But there's got to be some other practical ways of killing your vermin. I mean, come on.
It's been the
explosive.
Most effective way.
No, like fishing, for example. Like, totally, if I had to fish, I'd be fishing with explosives.
These animals, they're very... Look.
Otherwise, it's so boring.
I could just see Ben
so
out on a boat.
Boring.
I could see Ben on a boat, and like everybody else has a fishing rod. He's throwing dynamite in.
I tried once, and just so boring. I'm like, anybody got some, you know, some plastic explosive and can go home? Sushi is pre-made, ceviche, you know.
No more Roadrunner cartoons for you.
Next thing you know, you just see fish floating to the surface. You know, their ears disrupted.
Let's get on with it.
But no, it's been proven. It's one of the most effective ways to control these vermin, because of their very sensitive movement. You're getting anywhere close to them, you know, they flee, they go underground, they have a complex underground tunnel system, they eat crops, they spread disease.
Sounds like our politicians at the end of the world, right? Yeah.
You know, in Texas, those rifles are used to control coyotes that, you know, that might poach on herds of cattle. And again, it's another situation where
still
you need
rapid
a follow-up.
Fire, come on.
You need a follow-up shot.
Even the military and the front line will not use rapid fire on the automatics.
This is a huge... An automatic weapon hasn't been legal since like the early 80s or something like that. And I'm not... There's a difference between a rapid follow-up shot, meaning that it's a semi-automatic weapon. A handgun is a semi-automatic weapon. That's the same thing as like an AR-15. It's a semi-automatic. You pull the trigger once, it fires once. What it is that you don't have to cycle the action manually in order to fire the next shot. So, I mean, your follow-up shot could occur in somewhere in between 3/4 of a second, 1.5 seconds, 2 seconds, something like that. Whereas a bolt-action rifle, you might be 3 to 4 seconds between shots. And in all fairness, something like, you know, a standard pump action shotgun, which is a lot of people use for home defense or, you know, maybe even hunting waterfowl, you know, your follow-up shots there are in the 1 to 2 second range. It's just that, it's a lot harder to get back on target when you're cycling the action manual.
Sure, but I mean, unless you're being attacked by the Terminator, you know, I mean.
But wait, let's open it. I mean, what's wrong with people? And I think probably, like we were saying, some people might need these assault rifles for groundhogs. But I'm sure a lot of people, and I can see where that would be necessary, actually.
Right, sure.
But I'm sure a lot of people like their, it's toys, you know? I mean, they like to go out back in the forest and blow stuff up, you know? And hey,
and Ben, you posted a link. I was actually just trying to find it on Facebook, but it was a statistic, right? Average, you know, deaths per year, they break it down. Yeah. And military-style weapons are responsible, on average, for 18 deaths a year, right?
Yeah. I learned that from Dan Carlin, a podcaster.
Rifles, meaning actually like a bolt-action rifle, if you will, something, you know, a technology that's ancient.
Yeah.
Those are responsible for like 3,200 deaths or 28, somewhere in
that neighborhood. Handguns were like 6 or above 1,000.
Handguns were approaching 7,000.
Knives as much.
Yeah.
Blunt objects, pretty remarkable.
So, I mean, you know, one thing is, and this goes to the idea that this is a reactionary measure. You know, people assume that, okay, we're going to ban these military weapons, these horrible weapons. You know, they shot kids in Connecticut. Does that mean that the violence is over? I mean, you look at a country like China, right, which has, you know, it's illegal for citizens to own a handgun, and by the way, they're fairly politically oppressed. You know, the government's not afraid of the people by any stretch. You have mass stabbings in schools. And these are just random madmen that instead of using a gun, they go in with an axe. And I actually posted a link of this on Facebook. One guy, I think, got up to like 42 kids. Not all of them died, right? But just like, all gunshot victims die. Mortality rate and gunshot
victims. There's a tremendous amount of these. Actually, this is a very important point that Corey is raising. It goes to the core of what I think is going on, is this is a societal collapse in some sense or decline that's going on here. So China is experiencing a similar thing. I don't know if I mentioned this in the show, but it's bare re-mentioning that people forget that we see the skyline of Shanghai. Everybody's like either wow or oh my god, they own us and all that stuff. But we forget that actually China on the average is a very poor country, like third world, not middle income, poor country. There are 200 million people who are even involved in the game. Many of them are working in the sweatshops, you know. They're already the fortunate one. Then there are the 800 million people who actually, after seeing some improvement in their lifestyles initially in the 90s, ended up now in the last 10 years are seeing just, you know, no healthcare, job security, everything falling apart around them. And they are going nuts, and they are acting out. So I'm saying, look, you see, it's not about the culture, it's not about the history, it's not about the gun control, it's about people being pushed over the edge by a failing political economic system.
You know, to go a little bit further on the lines of, you know, okay, will gun control be even effective, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people,
they
push the idea forward of like, okay, you know, England or Ireland, right, where gun ownership is more or less illegal. And, you know, they've got a low rate of gun-related crime. Gun ownership in Mexico is illegal. Yeah. And, you know, except for farmers, and it basically has to be
except for the U.S. government sells it to them, right? We know about that little scandal.
Look at the rate of gun-related violence in Mexico is absurd.
Right.
So, I mean, gun control hasn't been effective there. You already have...
but then again, look at their government. Come on.
You already have widespread use of... I'm sorry, not widespread ownership of firearms here in the U.S. So, you know, what's... You know, if we stop selling, you know, firearms, these military-style firearms, is that really going to make a difference? Mm-hmm. I think what we're doing is we're lying to ourselves on this point. Mm-hmm. All right? You can pass the bill. But if you really genuinely think it's going to prevent a mass shooting, if you think it's going to prevent a death, look, you can do a mass shooting with a revolver, all right? You don't need a detachable magazine. These things are called speed loaders for revolvers. It's essentially a plastic bit that just lets you put all six bullets in at the same time, okay? But you don't really get slowed down to any significant degree.
But let's say the person is really good with their gun and they're using a high-capacity magazine. Seems to me that the math would go towards having less.
It's marginal at best.
That's the kind of since we're supposed to be somewhat related to economics on this show. I promised. it's cost benefit in a sense, and I think the kind of the core of what Corey's saying, and I absolutely agree with him on that, is that this is somewhat symbolic. I mean, is the Obama proposal as scary and vile as some people, you know, notably my good?
No, it's not. It could go a little bit further.
It's not really. It's very mild. It's not taking our guns away or whatever.
Of course not.
And I feel and I appreciate the people, you know, fear the government. That's a healthy thing to do.
But here's the thing, you know, fear the government or not, our government could pretty much push us over three times.
Oh yeah, let's talk about this notion of me and my house, you know, with my 9mm, we're getting ready to shoot out away the...
I hate to say it, Americans are better armed than most people. People who don't own a gun, all right, or who aren't guns, they don't really realize how well armed Americans are. I mean, gun ownership per capita in the United States is 0.9, but meaning that there's one gun for almost every
citizen. But it's only a third of the population, I believe, who own more. I see there. Yeah, a third of the population are gun owners, which is a lot.
You know, I traveled the country quite a bit, particularly in southern states. Mm. And I'll tell you what, if you go to Texas is one state that the federal government will never roll over. Yeah, Georgia is another state.
Wait a minute. They'll do to them. I mean, okay, let me go. I'm channeling Alex Jones here. And I want to say that everybody's been really ripping on Alex Jones recently because he lost it on CNN. I lose it all the time, you know. I've said it before and I'll say it again. You know, Alex, you know, I disagree with a lot of things, most maybe of the things you say, but much respect, brother. Get angry. Yes, do get angry. This whole notion of staying cool about these things as our world collapses around us and we're going probably extinct anyway, so all this gun problem will be, you know.
But I love how we're focused on gun control. I'm from Chicago originally, you know. I've known the city for 26 years now. The last 3 years, no ice on the lake. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And when I was a kid, that thing used to ice, you know, a foot thick or so. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Oh, and I go, you know, to visit my parents up in, you know, in the Alps, and and you know the glacier. Where? Oh, yeah, there's a little bit up there, you know.
But hey, you know, let's stick with gun control, though, right? That's not a big deal.
We might need them to hunt raccoon for food, though. That's probably the most important reason to arm yourself, you know.
But I mean, compared to the U.S. government, regular Joe here is no match. You know, we go around going like, "Oh, I want
to." I mean, unless the government wants to use
it, having my gun.
Unless the government wants to use drone strikes, if they were ever going
to, if they do to Texas what they did to Afghanistan, you know, to Iraq, you know, there'll be a resistance.
This is an interesting segue here because of I've been talking to some people that I know in the area that are politically connected, right, mostly conservative, right wing, and they've actually been talking about this gun control issue possibly being a catalyst for. A black swan, if you will, for causing another secession movement here in the United States. There's actually some in behind closed doors. There is legitimate talk of a secessionist movement.
You know, for that to happen, they would have to cancel Honey Boo Boo and a few other programs so people would get off of their couches.
No, there's actually, it kind of makes sense if you think about it, because the country is very divided on the role of the federal government. They're divided on fiscal policy, right? And you've got a pretty large block of southern states that are all, you know, geographically connected. They're politically connected.
Sure. It sounds just like the 60s. I mean, you know.
Well, but this time it's not about, it's not so much a racist thing. You know, it's strictly just an ideological
except for everybody
view.
But the rich will have better start immigrating
right,
from
exactly.
those places because they will become some kind of modern plantation economy.
Yeah, it's just coming around full circle. I mean,
I'm comparing to some European secession ideas over the years, and it's just really, really dangerous. I mean,
I like the idea. I think it's a great economic experiment.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, we don't get many opportunities in economics mm-hmm. for experiments, right? Now, on a macro scale, all right, we've been doing a lot of stuff with behavioral economics over the last, like, 20, 30 years. Yeah. But, I mean, that's a very micro, and we know that, you know, there are a lot of emergent phenomena in economics.
Can you imagine an independent Louisiana? Do you want to live there?
I'm not saying I would want to live there, but again,
most Louisiana people would want to live there too. For you know, feeling.
I really genuinely think it would be a great economic experiment. You know, I would like to see a secessionist movement. I would like to see a block of the southeastern U.S. just go ahead and break off. And I think we would learn a lot from it. I really do. You know, I'm thinking, as an economist, I think long term, very long term.
Well, sure, it'd be a smaller government, for one.
Well, it's not just, but it's also a potential structure of the government, right? Yeah. I mean, we have, look.
A fundamentally different model, of course. Then yeah. How does the population move around, you know?
Well,
what I mean? That's kind of the thing. You have to have mass population migration between these yeah. areas. I'm thinking of the separation of Czech Republic and Slovakia, which are going to close. Experiment, you're 100% fascinating experiment. No doubt about that. I'm just thinking about this, the human cost.
Oh, there's always going to be human cost.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want, the way we're going now is not very promising either. I don't want to sound, that was exactly what I was about to say. I don't want to be dismissive of the human cost, but I mean, you know, the status quo isn't exactly
so great either.
That's
a very strong argument because things are bad, worse than most people realize, and not at the level of the governments. You know, the Nazis are taking over, we're all going into camps or. But another, in really pragmatic, the numbers are there. Wonderful post, by the way, on Facebook you made on the environment, you know? Very rational, refreshingly rational.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, well, sometimes it's true. I mean, when things are really bad, the business as usual is often the worst possibility, and maybe we do have to shake it, again, in the kind of a very straightforward cost-benefit approach to things. So from that perspective, I hear you. You know,
back on the gun control issue, you know, this is one of those things, unforeseen consequences of policy, right? There have been mass reports since the Feinstein bill was proposed of military assault style weapon sales, right?
Dealerships.
Hold on. First of all, the last 5 years for those style weapons have been record sales years to begin with.
Oh, I'm sure.
In the last month. Most dealerships in the U.S. have sold as many of those weapons as they have sold in the prior 5 years combined.
Yeah.
So it's
and those things, right? I mean, they're at least $1,000, more often $2,000. It's not like Africa where we're selling our AK-47s for $7.50 to $15.
You'd actually be shocked. They go for about $600 to $700, but they can go way higher.
As I saw,
they can go way higher. Yeah. And right now, there's a lot of price gouging going on. But here's the interesting thing: all right, this is what people are doing to skirt regulation, and they're because of the ex post facto clause. The Feinstein bill will be way too late for this, right? It just couldn't be done. With most firearms, the only thing that's actually regulated is what's called the receiver group, and which is generally it's a piece of aluminum or metal that just holds the trigger assembly, the firing pin. You know, it's where a magazine would be inserted into, right? And typically, those only run like $100 to $200, depending on what weapon it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, what people are doing is rather than buying the entire gun itself, they're going out and they're buying the receivers in mass because of later on. You can assemble the rest of the weapon, and basically the reason, and it's a legitimate reason that the legislation is done like that, is because if something breaks, you need to buy a replacement part, and you know, trying to regulate replacement parts, I mean, you might as well bang your head against a wall, you know, you can have ATF agents chasing down phantom paperwork for decades if you regulated that. So I mean, one of the unintended side effects of the Feinstein bill is that, you know, you very well might double the number of assault weapons in the hands of Americans over the course of an extremely short period
so,
of time.
So let me see if I get this straight. If you go out there and buy an assault weapon right now because all of a sudden it's becoming extinct, like...
If you can find one. If you can find one. They're sold out.
How about shotguns? You know, I mean, that's okay still?
There's going to be... certain shotguns will be restricted. Most, like something like a Remington 870, a classic, will not be restricted. There's a list of about 900 weapons.
Do I need to really hurry to get me one of those?
I mean, only if you're concerned about them selling out, because that's actually if you want to acquire a weapon right now, from everything I've read on the internet, nothing is in stock anywhere.
Wow.
But once the law passes, you can't use it, right?
No. That's not it at all. Because again,
not even limited,
you couldn't write. First of all, you couldn't write a law like that without a constitutional amendment, because I believe it's Article 2, Section. I forget the section. I know it's in Article 2. There shall be no bill of attainder or ex post facto law, and because of the fact that firearms were a privilege, or I'm sorry, not a privilege, a right specifically given to citizens, right, in the Second Amendment. Is it the Second?
Mm.
Yes, Second Amendment. Because of that, you would need a constitutional amendment in order to take them out of the hands of citizens. And as you know, in order to have a constitutional amendment, 75% of the states have to ratify that amendment. And I got to tell you what, there's just not a snowball's chance in hell.
After secession, perhaps, though.
After secession, perhaps. But an interesting note, this goes back to the fully automatic thing. Fully automatic weapons have been illegal since like the early 80s. Mm. They were actually never very popular to begin with, but they were technically legal, I think, before like 82, and there were some made, and they made it into the hands of civilians. There might be like 5,000 or so fully automatic assault rifles in the hands of civilians around the U.S. And those are legal, and they can be resold legally. You have to be registered with the ATF. They have to do a background check. And they're extremely expensive. I mean, these weapons go for $20,000 to $25,000 a piece. But basically what will happen is that if the Feinstein bill passes, if you own an assault weapon, you'll still be able to own it, still be able to use it, still just be able to buy ammo for it, still be able to buy replacement parts for it. You can still resell it.
The law doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, the law is basically a feel-good measure at best.
That's the core, really, that we have to underline, that many people who are not...
when they say
it's not going to do really anything.
Yeah, it doesn't make any
symbolic
sense.
It's symbolic. I did something. And that's really what's important for politicians.
You know, like even myself, when I hear all this, racket about laws and blah, 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 I even want to go out there and buy a gun just to have it as nostalgia. I got one. Mm. But if you're not going to really restrict it, then why even bother passing a law like that?
Posturing.
Yeah. I mean, and Ben, you made an interesting point that, the NRA should really, take a leadership role here.
And again, I have to.
And I agree with that.
Dan Carlin's point.
The NRA, I'm disappointed with the way they've handled the whole thing, because they kind of got their head in the sand. Mm. Because if you were going to have some sort of meaningful firearms, regulation, right? Maybe change the 3-day waiting period to a week, right? But just make citizens get training if they're going to own a weapon.
Sure, I totally believe in that. I mean, if we're going to go that route. Yeah.
And it's pretty expensive, by the way, as I looked at that. It's not awfully expensive, but it's a matter of over $200 to...
Oh, you're looking in the wrong place.
Oh, really? No, because you have to take a class.
Yeah, like $65 for most of the time for a concealed carry class.
Yeah, I got this nice place next door, so I...
Oh, okay, well, their rent must be high or something, but...
I'm thinking, I know that, of doing that, me and my wife, we need to...
Get ready for the revolution.
The concealed carry thing, that's probably going to make it into the Supreme Court at some point because of that's done on a state-by-state basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a clause in the Constitution that, states are to recognize treaties between each other, which means, laws, right?
Right.
But there have been several incidents. A couple of years ago, a United States Marine who I want to say lived in like Pennsylvania, he had a concealed carry permit. He traveled to New York City, which has a very high rate of crime.
Mm-hmm.
And he went into the World Trade... Oh, and I'm sorry. This was recently. He went to the New World Trade Center, like their Memorial Center. And as he was going through security, he asked, where should I check my gun? And the person in security freaked out. It's like, well, what are you talking about? And he got arrested, and the guy's actually sitting in jail now.
Wow.
Because it's illegal to conceal carry a handgun in New York City. Okay. Even though he had a permit, he had a legal right from Pennsylvania, and under the Constitution, New York State and New York City are supposed to recognize that. So it's going to be very interesting to see how, and that's not the only case. There's about a dozen cases like that sitting on the book.
It's already a little strange, like in Florida, right? I mean, when I asked, I don't yet have a concealed weapon, so I can't carry it, you know, in the back of my pants, right? But I can walk around, of course, not on public property. For example, at Rollins College, you're not allowed to carry firearms. You have a private property policy.
Yeah.
But I can walk around downtown with...
Open carry.
With the suitcase, with your Smith & Wesson suitcase outside like that, you know, with a gun box that I purchased my gun with.
You can open carry as well.
Or I can just carry it, like, in my hair.
When I say exactly.
But
when I say open carry, I mean it's like, you know, if you see a police officer walking around, he's got a holster and he's, you know, got a handgun in the holster, and you can see it and it's clear. That is actually legal for citizens to do. Nobody does it because it's probably socially awkward.
And you don't even need a license for that to have purchased it.
You don't need a license.
You need to show your payslips and address and prove a couple of things.
The only restriction might be that you can't have one in the chamber. I don't know. But I know, like a cop's ever going to check that. You know, that's probably a reasonable safety precaution.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't take much to put one in there, right?
But
it's insanity.
And by the way, open carry...
Yeah, the irrationality of it. I mean, do we really... I want to say, you know, our other usual guest, Chris Gerlach, posted recently, and I reposted the notion that the one interesting thing in the Obama proposal is that he is refinancing and allowing the research... precise. So we find out really what's rational to do about this. And that's probably the one thing I think we can definitely squarely get behind. And it's also a very big picture issue that so many issues today in American politics, not just in America, are based on these, we don't know what the hell we're talking about. It's all emotional. It's all ideology. And we almost, you know, and it was a bill sponsored in 96. I looked that up. I always love to put crap on the door of Bill Clinton, you know, that everybody's, you know, that's the liberal, it's the liberal Ronald Reagan, you know, a major lousy president that the liberals love Clinton, forget all the horrible things he did, just like the conservatives love Reagan, forgetting all the horrible things he did. But yeah, 96, based on NRA lobbying, let's not research. You know, this notion that this is a contestable, difficult question, so what are we going to do about it? Ban researching it.
Right.
And
right.
So that we don't even we're not even tempted to look at it rationally, to look at the numbers, so we go fully ideology politics. It's an insane, literally, technically an insane approach to policymaking.
Isn't that the Republican mission statement?
Well,
forget our research.
One has to give, I made to one of my, to one of my students from last night, I made a facetious remark, but he's a good guy, he can take it. about, you know, I kind of said, yeah, liberal, he was poking fun at liberal, and I said, yeah, liberal are almost as ignorant as conservatives. You know? So let's spread the hate, shall we? But it has to be said that much of the blame to this anti-science, anti-expert, pull it out of whatever orifice, don't look at the numbers, don't ask the experts, has been a major plank of the cuckoo conservatives, just to make sure that the good conservatives
parties,
are respected.
The Democrats also have fallen on that,
too. I'm interested to see how... I would like to see the firearms research. I'd like to see how it pans out, because, you know, there's a YouTube video posted, and I shared it, I think I shared it on Punkonomics. I know I shared it on my wall.
The
guy he was talking about, right, he talked about...
The pro-gun black guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Very, very...
But, I mean, he made a good point, right? Yeah, you know, the media hasn't covered this. A couple days after the shooting in Vermont, I want to say it's in like Pennsylvania or something, somebody almost committed a mass shooting in a theater in, I want to say, Pennsylvania, and a person, a responsible citizen with a concealed carry permit and a handgun, put that person down.
So that's the positive side, and he
named about three recent incidents just that he was aware of that the media didn't cover at all, where people with concealed handguns were able to stop either a mass shooting or some sort of an attack. And by the way, you know, I looked at some interesting statistics, like rate per capita, right? We're up there, people, here in the U.S. You know, there's a lot of violence against women. So, you know, when it comes to...
You know, globally, 1 in 3 women will be sexually assaulted.
You know, I was not aware that was that high. That is unbelievably high. Yeah. But I did see that underreporting was
I'm not talking
massive.
About harassment. I'm talking about assault.
Right.
The you know, if you're really looking at this from a logical standpoint, you know, say you're like a single mom or something like that. You're working a night shift or a late shift in a bad part of town. I mean, mm-hmm. honestly, do you think mm-hmm. it's not a good idea for her to carry some sort of a handgun to defend herself?
I have a 10-year-old daughter, and yeah. when she starts leaving the house without me, she's going to be packing multiple guns.
It's not a bad idea, and you know, I just want to clarify, I'm not against you know, owning guns and stuff like that. What I'm against is ignorant people owning guns.
Yeah, I don't know how you legislate against that.
But the point being taken that while there is, and he made a very good argument, the guy mm-hmm. you posted on multiple levels, and also I want to point out that the interesting for my interest in media was that he was how the media glorifies negatively,
right,
but glorifies
right.
the shooter,
in, right.
but doesn't tell the same story about the guy who took down right. a potential right. shooter. Why aren't right. we seeing his face on television everywhere?
I think if they pass any kind of regulation, it should be mostly on the education side. People get educated on yep. how to use guns.
And again, I brought up a couple shows ago, Norway's model for gun ownership, in my opinion, is excellent. Right? You know, before you own a gun, you have to receive fairly extensive training over a fairly long period of time, and that's a bit of a filter, right? I mean, first of all. I got to tell you, most people out there that own a gun probably can't hit anything with it, right? So, I mean, it's kind of pointless if you're going to own a gun, you know, for self-defense. And in that event that you hope never happens, you have to use it for self-defense if it's not effective.
Or you put it in, like, was just in the gun safe with the ammunition separately.
Yeah,
so, and then eventually what you're going to do, like, throw that safe
at
the face?
Yeah, like, you know, dial it up, right? But, I mean, you know, training is excellent. And, you know, if... look, you're always going to have a madman out there. And it doesn't, you know, if you take guns away from him, he's going to find something else, you know.
It does help. But I mean, again,
it's convenient.
It's easier to kill somebody on the spur of the moment, let's say, with
well, sure, spur
I mean,
of
you're
the
right
moment.
That you can do it.
But most
firearms in general, in this case, I agree with you that this is does not apply to the issue of the assault weapon so much, but a knife is, again, Eddie Izzard, you know, has that joke, you know, yeah, guns don't kill people, people do, but they help.
Exactly. They make it's a little bit more efficient.
After all.
It is more efficient.
Than with the
hammer. But I mean, like, you know, say the shooting in the Colorado theater.
Okay.
Right? You know, let's say he didn't have his hands on an assault weapon. This is a guy that planned, right? No. He was going to kill people. That was in his mind, okay? Yes. The rifle was convenient. Honestly, the fact that he had a rifle and that he couldn't shoot and really connect, right? Because he should have killed a lot more people.
Yeah, you know, luckily, right. He was sure. remarkably...
In a bizarre way, that might have actually saved lives because that kid, he had his apartment rigged with explosives. There was absolutely... If he didn't have access to a firearm, there's no reason he wouldn't have made multiple bombs, right? Mm. Bombs are very,
true,
very deadly
true.
And effective.
Yeah.
There's no reason that he probably would have taken more lives.
But then, by the other side is, in his attempt to find a gun, he might have gotten caught.
Well, he didn't get caught.
Right, because
he didn't
there's not
get
enough
caught.
Regulation. There's not enough,
I mean,
you know, oversight on
even,
gun sales
even,
or
even,
you know,
with fairly,
else. I mean,
even with fairly strict regulation, as long as ownership is legal, I mean, he just would have had all he would have had to do is bide his time. That's it.
Yeah. But before we run, there are a couple of things I want to make sure. I mean, you know, the NRA are talking about putting armed police, more police in schools and stuff like that. And that's really where I got angry. I went all Alex Jones with myself. Because of, and Democracy Now, I believe, yesterday had a bit on that. Democracy Now is a left-leaning, progressive news show. Pretty good. That really pissed me off. Why? Because of what happens to kids in schools, especially in disfavored neighborhoods, where the schools are more and more similar to prisons. And
right.
in fact, if you're a minority in a poor neighborhood, the schools are literally the preschool of prison.
Right.
Well, we know. I mean, the term is the school to prison pipeline. So this notion that we'll have the friendly policeman. No. People are put in. You know, are arrested in America for cursing in the schoolyard. There's a lot of stuff. I'd like to remind people that every 36 hours, a black person is gunned, unarmed, innocent black person is gunned down by police or private police. Mm-hmm. And that also brings me back to this notion. What about Norway there? You know, they have a lot of guns and they don't shoot each other so much. But there's other things to say about Norway. They also have, by now, ranking, and ranking is always a bit problematic, the best education system in the world.
Yeah.
And the reason is that their explicit goal of the education system is to promote actively egalitarianism, equality, right? My point being, it's a very differently man. They have their own different culture and society, what have you. Though Norwegian, you know, Scandinavians cannot claim to be coming from a very peaceful stock. Don't forget, Vikings. Yeah. And actually, they do have a lot of violence. And you know, after the pubs closed in Sweden, people think, oh, Swedes, they're all like hippies. No, they're a bunch of skinhead hooligans. Many of them, you know, they're actually a rather violent people. You know.
You mean but they don't look like ABBA?
No. Look like ABBA coming out of the bar late at night in Stockholm, you're going to get beat up, you know? Though they're geriatrics by now, I guess.
Yeah, that's
no,
right.
No, like, senior citizens. I remember seeing them win the Eurovision Song Contest, you know? Yeah,
Canes can hurt.
So, but the point being that they have a well-functioning society. I'm getting back to that we have no escape of dealing with our societal literally close to collapse. I don't want to be over-alarmist because people kind of switch off when you say that, but I think the numbers
really
speak for themselves.
The behavior once it's in there. I mean, it's
infant
it's
mortality. I mean, in so many ways, we look like a unstable, poor country, and kind of that's the root problem after all. Like Corey was explaining very well, why these policies aren't gonna really
save
lives. Place.
It's a feel-good measure. You know, she's trying to put a political notch under her belt, and, she'll deprive some people of their toys or, they'll make things, she'll make it more expensive or more difficult for, an industry, not necessarily a huge industry, but, an industry here in the U.S. And again, you're not going to save
it. Not small, huh? $12 billion? That's a reasonable, almost half a video game industry.
Is it? I think the video game industry is even bigger than that now.
It's a quote. Yeah. Where did I get that? Democracy Now. So okay. Whether it's right or wrong, they're usually all right.
I have to check them out. Anyway, let's let the Ramones talk about another well-armed group, one of the 50s and 60s favorites. KKK Took My Baby Away.
Oh, yeah.
She went away for the holidays. Says she's going to LA. She never got there, she never got there, she never got there, they say, yeah. She went away for the holidays, says she's going to LA. She never got there, she never got there, she never got there, they say, yeah. The KKK took my baby away, they took her away, away from me. The KKK took my baby away, they took her away. Away from me. Hey, ho. Hey, ho. And I don't know where my baby can be. They took her from me. They took her from me. I don't know where my baby can be. They took her from me. They took her from me. Ring me, ring me, ring me. The president. Find out where my baby went.
Baby away.
rock, rock, rock away, bitch. Rock, rock, rock away, bitch. Rock, rock, rock away, bitch. We can hit you rock away, bitch. Rock, rock, rock away, bitch. Rock, rock, rock away, bitch. Rock, rock, rock away, bitch. We can hit you rock away, bitch.
Okay, welcome back, Winter Park, to Punkonomics. And we were discussing gun control, and we got into a pretty good discussion here.
See how difficult, complicated.
Very complicated, you know, definitely. I almost want to say that it's almost too late to do anything, but not doing anything is almost just as bad.
You know, Ben, while we were at break, Ben made a really good point, and I'd like to...
Yeah, to fill us in on how we keep talking when the music's on, you know, not just headbanging. maybe things like Corey was saying, like training and requirement of those kind of things, do not seem to be immediately an impact, but in the long run, maybe have some significant impact. Though to go back to what I was mumbling about Norway, right? It's kind of where we started with that, you know? Why do they have guns and they don't have the same problem? And I was claiming that, well, they have a very different political system and a very different, despite being just as crazy, as violent as we are, they have a better functioning system, they have better employment, they have social security, they have healthcare. And I say, that might be key here. So here's the story, and let's give credit again to important people like Nassim Taleb, who I know Curry's a great fan of, who's a conservative, I would call him, a smart conservative, a libertarian, ex-financial guy. And right after the crisis of 2008, he on YouTube, the only people, everybody was talking about real estate markets, and he and the great mathematician, whom I am a big fan of, and many years since grad school, Benoit Mandelbrot, who is one of the fathers of chaos theory, gave a little 15-minute talk on YouTube, and it was the only really deep discussion of what we were facing. Well, I don't know the only, but important. They were saying, listen, this is way bigger than anybody sees and thinks. Why? Because everything's interconnected today. And this, my students know, I have it on my syllabus in words that I cannot use here on the radio show, because it's cluster, and then the word starts with an F.
Just use the word cluster.
Cluster, and it's a technical term. it's mathematically.
It means many.
Oh no, it's a very sophisticated technical term. I guess Mandelbrot calls it differently. Some scientists will call it complexity, emergent phenomenon, whatever. The point is that all we have a set of big problems facing us in America, in the world, etc. Right, and. Possibly, if we were smart enough and we had a very well-functioning political system, economic system, we should have begun to deal with it 30 years ago or longer. The climate change is a good example, since we mentioned it early on. And inequality and lack of jobs and deindustrialization, so that our industries are already long gone in America, and you know, you can have a law but as effective as the gun law, you know, the STEM. Now we remember science, technology, and engineering. Too late, the jobs are gone, you know. 20 years ago, buddy. So many different issues. Societal, the fact that our kids are pushed into sociopathy, basically, all of those things together. Now, it's too late to attempt to solve one of these problems at the time because of these deep interconnections between them. You know, so we have gun violence problem, but that's linked to the economic problem, to the political problems, to the social problem, to the psychological problems, all many problems together. So now we're stuck, you see. We cannot solve one problem at a time. We have to solve them all at the same time or not at all, which is basically saying the only solution is revolution. You know, now it doesn't have to be Soviet style or French style. But it's got, and it doesn't have, or right wing militia style, but
or Gundam style.
But yeah, but actually,
Gundam
like,
style could be fun. Let's maybe, think about it. Gundam style revolution.
Behind that, right? Yeah, some of these needs to mesh that up. but yeah, you know, I mean, but maybe 17th, you know, early 18th century style, where the world, where the word was actually coined, the notion of a circle, right? Revolution is when you kind of move, dial. A system, you turn it around to something else. I'm willing to go quite comfortably to say, yes, we need a revolution. Exactly what kind, and let's hopefully make it as less, you know, violent as possible, as less painful, as all of those things, absolutely. But revolution in the sense of changing the core of the system. You know?
I'm going to throw this in there. Secession might not be a bad idea.
Let's talk about it. By the way, I love it. You know? Let's talk about secession.
Well, we started talking about that in California, and, you know, it's been 40 years.
Interesting note. We got about 2 minutes. Interesting note. Texas cut a different deal with the rest of the union. It is technically not a state. Right, it is a confederation of its own states. It can leave whenever it pleases.
A confederation of its own states?
That's right. Texas is composed of either 4 or 5 states. Well, Texas itself is huge. I mean, you know, you appreciate it when you go there, just how big it is. Mm. But
It's mostly brushland.
I think us Puerto Ricans got the Texans beat. I mean, Commonwealth, I mean, you know.
Well, Texas, again,
a pseudo-state, a make-believe state.
They can leave whenever they want. And for those, you know, for those who are familiar with resource economics, I'm pretty big into that. Texas is just fine on its own. They got tons of oil. They got tons of natural gas. You know, the U.S. would actually be kind of hurt. You know,
it's definitely, they're big enough and rich enough to at least make it. I mean, the thing is this notion of just like in Europe, these Basques want to separate. I'm always, for years, are you sure? Well, you want to be a tiny post-colonial
It's not tiny. And I'm not saying that they'll get it right politically. There's a good chance they won't. But at least there's a chance.
It's better than nothing. All I can say about Texas is I drove through that state, and I'm glad I never will again.
You didn't go to Austin. You have to go to Austin.
I actually had a blast in Texas. As a tourist, you know, like back in the 80s, I showed up there. You know, I went to like the world's biggest nightclub. You know, everybody was wearing cowboy hats. I thought it was so almost slipped my mouth, the usual. It was hilarious, you know. And in a kind of a, the horns on the cars.
I've been to Austin. You're right.
Austin is a cool town.
That is one piece of heaven. So that state, it's very well hidden. But the rest of the state, they can keep it. Anyway, folks, we'd like to thank you for listening to Punkonomics today. Again, we will be back next Friday at 9 o'clock all the way to 10. And you can catch us the webpage, Punkonomics.
Right, there's punkonomics.org. It's searchable. I found it on iTunes, though funnily only starting at show 6. I don't know.
It's weird.
I don't know how that worked. Maybe that's when they approved it officially, kind of thing. Because you know, to get into weird a little. Yeah, that must be it. But it's easily found. Facebook and my email the radio station. Email me personally if you can't find it. I'll hook you up.
if you get curious, sure. I mean, you know, anyway, again, we'll see you again next week. And thank you, Winter Park, for listening to Punkonomics.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.